Hey everyone, welcome back to a new year and a new episode of Teal Time with David Teal. I'm Jonathan Heater, alongside David Teal. How are you?
And a good rainy morning to you.
Well, 2019 has started the way much of 2018 went with...
been a little damp.
Living in metropolitan Seattle all of a sudden. So we were gone for a couple of weeks and a lot of sports happened.
Just a little bit.
So we'll start with the bowl games featuring Virginia and Virginia Tech. And then we'll come back and chat about national championship football game and the playoff, and we'll talk hoops. So stick around for all of that. I know you all always stick around for the whole
on our plate
hour we ramble. Let's start with the bowl game. So the first game, you went to both.
Yes.
The first one was the bowl game in Charlotte, the Belk Bowl, with Virginia playing South Carolina. I believe I confidently predicted before our layoff that South Carolina was going to win that game.
Not so much.
Not even close.
I thought Virginia had a really good chance to win. If I'd been a gambling man, I would have bet the Cavaliers to cover. Never would I have bet the Cavaliers to just boat race South Carolina. And that's what happened. 28-0 final. Only the second time in history that an ACC team has shut out an SEC team in postseason. The other was in 1975 when Maryland beat Florida in the Gator Bowl.
And they're not even in the ACC
That's
anymore.
That's correct. And South Carolina couldn't run it. Virginia could. Virginia held the ball for more than 40 minutes. They were like 11 of 15 on third down. South Carolina was maybe 3 of 16. I mean, Virginia owned the game from start to finish.
That's a signature game for a defensive-minded head coach.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And Virginia's first shutout of an FBS opponent since 2008 against the aforementioned Maryland Terrapins.
Well, so South Carolina, I mean, I think maybe they had the impressive offensive performance against Clemson.
Yeah.
They Jake Bentley, I think, threw for 400-plus.
500-plus.
510. And they put some points up on – a defense that we would see in the playoff was everything we thought it was.
Without Dexter Lawrence.
Right. We'll talk about that in a little while. I just thought that there was no chance that Virginia was going to completely shut them down.
They made Jake Bentley so uncomfortable in the pocket. Now, he missed some throws early, including, I believe, on South Carolina's first possession. They went for it on 4th-and-1 and ran a little play action. And he had a running back open in the right flat, and he just airmailed it. Makes that throw, who knows. And then later in the first half, he had a receiver drop a ball that might have gained him 15, 20 yards and converted a third down. As it was, they had to punt. But otherwise, Virginia just smothered them, made them very uncomfortable. And Virginia did this with only 4 healthy defensive linemen, essentially playing with 2 down and a bunch of linebackers and DBs. I mean, Bronco Mendenhall can X and O with the best of them on the defensive side. I think that's patently clear after 3 years. And as much as we marvel at Bryce Perkins, and rightfully so, he's so dynamic and so elusive at the quarterback position. The reason that the Virginia Cavaliers won 8 games for the first time since 2011 is the just exponential improvement of that defense. That's a top 20 defense this year. Whereas last season, it was a bottom 50 defense.
So we knew that South Carolina was going to lose. Their best receiver had sat out. But yeah, that doesn't make up the difference in that game. I mean, I know it changes, obviously, their offensive approach.
It does. But no, it does not account for just the total smothering that occurred.
So what is this? How does this catapult? Is there a tangible catapult for a season that's not even going to take place for another 8 months?
I think in Virginia's case, the answer is yes, simply because so many players are coming back, especially on the defensive side. Virginia started three seniors on defense against South Carolina. Tim Harris at corner, Juan Thornhill at safety, and Chris Peace at linebacker. Everybody else is coming back. It's going to be a pretty good group.
And we saw last year that the and we've talked about this a lot, the stars don't necessarily matter. It's the sum of the parts.
Mm-hmm. And the big announcement after the game is that Bryce Hall, the All-America cornerback, decided he's coming back for his senior year. Now, I don't know what his draft paperwork came back like. Maybe he was told he wasn't going to be selected in the first round. Who knows? Bronco Mendenhall said there was enough there to warrant really considering leaving. But he chose not to. And I think
quickly, too.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Like you have to, like, the 8th or something like that?
Well, and he said he had decided before the bowl and just didn't want to announce it until after. But I think one thing Bronco Mendenhall deserves unquestioned credit for is establishing a culture and a loyalty among the players there. They have bought in to him and what he's selling, and they want to take this to another level. And we've talked about this before. Other than Trevor Lawrence, there's not a returning quarterback in the league I would rather have than Bryce Perkins. And I don't think anybody could dispute that. I mean, Daniel Jones is leaving for the NFL anyway, but Bryce Perkins is better than Daniel Jones as a college football player, in my opinion. Every time I've seen them, it hasn't even been close. And then you add the 8 returning starters on defense. You look at the Coastal, where the division champion went 7-7. Nobody finished better than 8-5. By the way, that's only the third division in history of the Power Five in which no team finished better than 8-5. The others were the Big 12, one of the divisions in 96, and one of the divisions in 2004.
Wow, never an SEC West team back when they were in their
no,
down period.
No, never an ACC team. So you look at the landscape in the rest of the Coastal, Virginia is absolutely in the conversation for next season.
Oh, they'd be right now my number one or my top pick to win the Coastal.
I think they're right there, first, second.
Tech would be up there probably.
Yeah, and I think Miami, even though the train wreck that it became late in the season and then Mark Richt's sudden retirement, they made the best of it. I think getting Manny Diaz back from Temple after his long and storied 17-day career there
undefeated
as the Owls head coach, I think that's the best possible outcome down there.
Do you?
I do. I think he's,
maybe long term.
Yeah.
Short term, there's some problems because they don't have an offense. They don't have a quarterback to speak of.
They have nothing on the offensive side. But you know how college football works.
You got to transfer.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe.
Grad transfers and transfers who can come in and get a waiver. I don't think next season's starting quarterback for Miami has set foot in Coral Gables yet.
Well, it'd be really interesting because to see who he hires as an OC, because he wiped out the offensive staff. And a lot of those guys were Mark Richt loyalists. Thomas Brown, Mark Richt's son, right, was on the staff.
Well,
Stacey Searles was at Georgia.
Right. And I think Stacey Searles, by the way, a former Virginia Tech assistant. Mark Richt retired. I believe that. I believe it was voluntary.
I do too.
But I think Mark Richt was told, you need to overhaul that offensive staff, and that includes your son. And he didn't have the stomach for that. And that's in large measure why he exited stage left. Because if Manny Diaz had any notion,
he wouldn't have gone
right. He wouldn't have gone to Temple.
Because they had
absolutely
to pay a buyout.
$4 million.
So there's no way. That had to be completely out of the blue. And
yes,
it caught youth by as much surprise as it did me.
Yeah.
I was having lunch with my parents and held up the phone to my dad.
Yeah, no,
and
I was
just like, whoa.
I was driving to Annapolis. From Charlotte.
So to
answer your to go back to your original question, tangible effect for Virginia heading into 2019, I absolutely believe it. I think the best word And I use this quote to close the column from the Belk Bowl. Best word I heard was from Eli Handback, the defensive end. He said, this catapults us into 2019. And I thought that was really accurate.
Well, I believe a veteran sports columnist from the Daily Press also may have had a line about Hall that or maybe it was a tweet about the idea that Hall coming back led him to believe that there's something special.
Yeah.
Because if he, you know, it's hard to pass up. He would have gotten drafted. I don't know how high he would have gotten drafted. Yeah. He's an all-ACC cornerback.
Yeah, he's second-team All-American. Dude, he's good now.
Yeah. And having that, having talented one-on-one guys on the outside, you know, that's a huge benefit in a league that has become pretty pass-happy at times.
And it's something, by the way, and maybe I'm teeing it up for you as a segue. It's something Virginia Tech does not have.
Well, yes, that would be a perfect segue. But let me stay here for 1 second because sure. We brought it up and I don't want to forget. Is Mark Richt done?
Great question. If we were doing a poll question, who's more likely to coach again, Mark Richt or Urban Meyer? That's a hell of a question, and it just popped into my mind. We are totally riffing here.
Yeah, I think Urban's got that competitiveness that I feel like he's the kind of guy who can't live without it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mark Richt would generally be fine to go away, particularly since he lasted 3 years at his alma mater, a place right. that he loved. That's even if he left on his own terms because he wouldn't have people fall on the sword for him, that's still a pretty bad way to leave.
It's a place that he loves, but would you agree, knowing Mark Richt, and you know him far better than I, and knowing his values, and kind of knowing the edginess that comes with Miami football and trying to lead that program and the people and the attitudes that surround that program, it wasn't a great fit. Alma mater or no?
Yeah, I mean, he's coached at some pretty swaggery places. I mean, he was at Florida State when they were full on just an elite powerhouse.
Good point, well taken.
Georgia had a little bit of swagger to it. So I don't know if he seems a little laid back for what it takes to succeed. But then the guys that are high wired haven't really done well there either. I mean, Randy Shannon, a little bit laid back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do well. Al Golden, a little bit more fiery. Didn't do well.
Yeah.
So I just think that going back to Schnellenberger and Jimmy Johnson, it's just so much harder to keep guys down there. And that was the key to Miami's early success, right, was keeping all those Florida kids in South Florida.
Yeah.
It's just a lot harder to do that now because Alabama and Ohio State and Michigan can come into Miami and steal kids.
So can UCF, by the way.
Yes, sure. I don't know. I don't know that he's done. He's still relatively young.
He's not 60 yet.
No, and he's a guy that, like you said, has strong values. And I think he wants to – I mean, he set up a program at Georgia where he was connecting with former players and helping them move along in life, trying to reach out. And not a lot of coaches do that. I know coaches want to have connections to players, but not a lot of them actually take the steps to try to get jobs and
right.
and make sure kids are in the right spot. And I think he has that mentoring quality that he wants to still have, but there's a lot of different components to that. He could find that in different walks of life. He's young, and he's obviously a good coach. The quarterback situation got a little sideways on him the last 2 years, and he could hide it last year. He couldn't hide it this year. I think Urban's more likely to be done, but there's something about Urban's fire that it's hard for me to think that either of them are completely done.
And if Brian Kelly takes the Tampa Bay job, you don't think Urban's
no,
gonna...
I don't. I think he's going to at least take a year off.
Has to take a year off.
Man, when you start hearing brain cysts, that's some scary stuff. But you know, the elite coaches, they have an ego to them, and they have a desire to win, and that's hard to get rid of. Speaking of winning, Virginia Tech played in the Military Bowl and did not do that. Not as good a segue as you had set me up for.
and did not finish with a winning season for the first time since 1992.
Well, so they lost 35-31 to Cincinnati. A Cincinnati team that I think was 11-2.
Finished 11-2, yeah.
So a good team for sure.
Absolutely.
Was this more a measure of Virginia Tech's defense again struggling, or was they just play a really good team? Both?
They played a very good team that they should have beaten. They had every chance to win the game. I mean, the fumble in the end zone, I don't know if you saw the play. I think it was Cincinnati. I forget which touchdown it was for Cincinnati, where the running back fumbles the ball and nobody notices. The ball is just sitting there for what seemed like 30 seconds until all of a sudden all these folks start diving and it ends up in the hands of a Cincinnati wideout in the end zone. Now, part of that is karma.
Right, that's fortuitous.
Yeah, from the UVA game where Stephen Peoples fumbles in the end zone and Hezekiah Grimsley latches onto it for the tying touchdown against the Cavaliers there in the fourth quarter. But they're ahead by a touchdown. Dillon Rivers gets the pick there early in the fourth quarter. Right there in plus territory, they're in the red zone, they're 12 yards from going up two scores, and they come away empty. You know, the fourth and one play just got blown up. I wouldn't have gone for it. I'd have kicked to go up six because I'm thinking Cincinnati's going to score again. Then I only need a field goal. As it was, Cincinnati did score again. Virginia Tech needed a touchdown, needed to be more aggressive on that last series. Throws a pick, you know, drive home safely.
Yeah, so I actually, when that was happening, we were watching the game, and Jane says, you should remind yourself to ask Teal what he would have, what he thought about that. Because Virginia Tech over the last 2 years has had instances where they've not taken points or they have taken points when they shouldn't. I mean, you know, they've had some decision-making late in games that have Georgia Tech game last year.
Yeah.
There were some issues with that. Yeah. I thought they should have taken the points there.
I did too.
But I wasn't like, it wasn't like, what a terrible decision.
No.
Now, what happened made it look terrible because mm-hmm. they got two free runners on the quarterback.
Yeah, and the quarterback stumbled coming
yeah,
out.
Yeah, right. He tripped over his lineman, right?
Yeah, well, and that's because the lineman got blown back
by
Cincinnati's defenders. It was a total clown show from the snap of the football, and the play was doomed. And, you know, it goes down as a Ryan Willis fumble, but the truth, they weren't going to get the first down. Cincinnati
right.
was going to regain possession anyway. And then the officials didn't lose the game, but Virginia Tech had a chance to run clock at the end and would have converted a third down, but for a really, really sketchy offensive pass interference flag on Dalton Keene.
Yeah.
And I asked Justin Fuente about it after the game. And I was kind of baiting him. And most of the times coaches don't take the bait, and Fuente rarely does. And he went all in.
Yeah.
Never seen him like that about a call. He was frosted. Because it happened right in front of him, and that's part of the reason I asked him. I knew he'd had a front row seat for that penalty. And, man, he was torqued off. And I didn't blame him. But that's not what lost him the game. Cincinnati needs to go 64 yards to win the game. Five plays, all rushes, right up the gut. It's the story of Virginia Tech's season. Now, Ricky Walker's not in there. They got ravaged by injury again during the game.
Yeah.
Javon Quill in a corner. Lose both tailbacks, Peoples and McLeese, which puts him down to Holston, who actually ran the ball fine.
And McLeese had a good game
before
he got hurt. And that has not been – they have not used him a whole lot this year, right?
Yeah. And McLeese, who had run – it was his first 100-yard game since last season's bowl against Oklahoma State in Orlando. But it's the worst – defense Bud Foster's ever had there. And, you know, I mentioned the situation at corner. They can't stop anybody from throwing the football either. I mean, they have no cover corners who are reliable. None.
So I asked you about Virginia's bowl catapulting him into next season. Does Virginia Tech just wash this away as a sort of a lost season?
No. I think Justin Fuente and his staff, and I wonder if there will be some staff changes, especially on the defensive side. But I think they have to take some lessons from this. Where injuries happen, early outs to the NFL happened. What really compromised this team were internal disciplinary and academic issues that cost them even more attrition and further depleted the roster, especially on the defensive side. That kind of foolishness has got to get fixed in a hurry. And I think Justin Fuente realizes that, and he addressed it after the game and said, we have to get better in a lot of areas. And I think that's especially what he was talking about. And this is a lot different than 1992. In 1992, Virginia Tech went 2-8-1, and Frank Beamer had had four losing seasons in 6 years. That's crisis time.
In today's football, that's fired time.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. That's call your real estate agent time. This is Tech's first losing season since. They went to a bowl. They beat their arch rival for the 15th consecutive time. And, oh, by the way, in the Military Bowl against Cincinnati, the Hokies started four seniors. Everybody's coming back. There's some talent there. Not enough of it, but there's talent there. And there needs to be more commitment. There needs to be more buy-in. But there's no reason Virginia Tech can't contend in the Coastal.
No, I would put them too.
There's no reason that in 2007 and 2011 Virginia Tech and Virginia played and the winner was going to the ACC championship game. I think it could easily happen again in 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if Pitt continues its growth. I know they've got some senior issues, but
by far Pitt loses the most out of the Coastal, including both running backs.
You have a very good coach, probably nearing the end of his time at Duke.
And David Cutcliffe. Yeah.
Georgia Tech. Who knows what we're going to get out of that?
Out of Jeff Collins.
It could be good, but they could also be awful because it's going to take some time to transition away from that offense. My guess is that they would have to run some sort of a spread type option-y run-based offense next year at least. Miami is a kind of a question mark. If they don't get a transfer, I don't know how they score points next year. So, yeah, I think
North Carolina with Mac Brown, you know, how does that work out?
Eventually they're going to be, I think, a team that people are going to have to deal with.
I think Mac's going to recruit.
I do too.
I absolutely
do. It may take
a
year.
And they did on Sunday. You know, they flipped to quarterback. I don't know everybody's name, but they flipped to quarterback who had committed to Florida State.
Yeah.
Big time kid.
Yeah.
And he's coming in early. And I wouldn't be – he's not coming in early to carry a clipboard and red shirt next season.
It's funny, like, you know, Mac – you will know Mac Brown way better than I. I've never talked to him. But he's a gentleman coach, it seems.
Yeah.
And it seems like that breed of coach, the folksy kind of gentleman coach, is so hard to find anymore. Mark Richt was probably one of those guys.
Yeah. Well, Mac Brown's one of Frank Beamer's best friends in coaching. Yeah,
Beamer would have been another one. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see with a few years off, he's a little older than most new coaches, how he connects and how he recruits. I think he'll be all right. And I think they'll win. There's a lot less of a microscope on you at North Carolina than there was at Texas.
Just a little bit.
And by any stretch of the imagination, he was very successful at Texas. He won a national title.
Yes, he did.
But if he even at the lean years of Texas, if he had that same run at North Carolina, I think those folks would be pretty happy.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah. Shout out to, I bet you didn't see this coming, Cincinnati defensive tackle Cortez Broughton, who I covered in high school.
Really?
One of the best young men I've ever covered.
And did you see where I shouted him out in the walk-up column.
No.
Oh, I absolutely did. Not only because he had 17 tackles for loss this season, but because he was on the Warner Robins team that reached elimination round of the 2009, I think it was, Little League World Series.
You should find a picture of him playing on that Little League team, because he was like 6'2 on that Little League team, and those are 11- and 12-year-olds. And so he was playing first base and just looked like an absolute giant. You know who else was on that team?
No.
I think Jake Fromm.
How about that?
I think Jake Fromm was on one of the teams that went to the Little League World Series. Warner Robins had like three or four. Yeah, Jake Fromm played on one. And Cortez Broughton, who is, without question, one of the best young men I've ever covered.
How about that? No, he can play now, too.
Yeah, he's just a sweet guy. All right, let's jump over to some of the other bowls, since we haven't talked about any of the bowls yet.
No.
As far as the ACC goes, a little bit of a mixed bag.
5-5.
Yeah.
In the bowls.
There were some good results, but there were some terrible results.
Yeah. The interesting thing about the bowl season, real quickly, is no Power 5 conference is more than a game over or a game under 500. Everybody's right there. The SEC 6-5. Big Ten's 5-4, Pac-12 and Big 12, I think the Big 12's 4-3, Pac-12 3-4, ACC 5-5.
Yeah.
So it's a mixed bag for everyone.
Which is why you shouldn't bet on bowl games.
No. Well, and plus because coaching changes and this guy sits
motivation.
Out. Motivation. Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So Wake Forest, we went into that game with Memphis. We thought Memphis would probably take care of things, but their running back didn't play.
Right.
And Wake Forest wins that one. Georgia Tech with just a putrid effort in Paul Johnson's last game.
I thought they'd be so much better.
I did, too. And they lost by three touchdowns.
Yeah.
Three touchdowns plus. Boston College and Boise State, that's the first time I've ever seen a bowl canceled.
Well, that's because it's never happened.
Is it? Is that real? Is that right?
Yes.
Wow. I don't know. If you're a first responder, like how mad do you feel that you didn't get a game out of it? I'm surprised they didn't play it another day or come back the next day.
I don't pretend to know the logistics, but what a bad deal for everyone concerned.
I know there's a lot of TV issues because ESPN's airing all of these things.
Yeah. Well, ESPN owns most
of these games. That's right. Duke blew out Temple. That's a pretty nice last impression for Daniel Jones, who entered the NFL draft and is probably projected as a first-round pick right now.
Wow, I just don't see it.
Well, there are so few elite quarterbacks in this draft, and there are so many teams that need quarterbacks, that someone's going to reach on him. And either he's going to prove us wrong, or somebody's going to lose a job. Because I don't see it either. But he has had some really good games.
Hey, he threw for more than 400 against Temple.
Yeah, a Temple team that was in a little disarray with an interim coach.
Yeah.
And then with the other coach being on campus. But anyway, yeah, somebody's going to jump on him, I think, because Justin Herbert has decided he's staying at Oregon.
Right.
And so who's the top quarterback?
Haskins, right?
If he comes out, yeah, for sure. But then you have Kyler Murray, and do you take a chance on him? Mm-hmm. Based on, I mean, he's got the tool set, even though he's short. He's got a hell of an arm, but he's playing baseball. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting. But Daniel Jones is going to be a first-round pick. Wisconsin just destroyed Miami, and that is the perfect end to Miami's offensive season.
Yeah, that was brutal.
Syracuse wins by 16 over West Virginia. West Virginia was hurt by Will Grier not playing, it seems.
Yeah. Syracuse will finish the year among the top 25 for the first time since 2001. That's a heck of a season for them to go 10-3.
Yeah. You saw there was only two good bowl games. You saw one of them. The other was probably Wake and Memphis, right? Clemson, well, we'll get to that in a second.
Pitt-Stanford was close.
It was close.
But I didn't see any of it. And apparently the winning touchdown was scored on a fumble in the end zone. Am I right?
Yes. It was close, but it was not a good game.
Okay.
Stanford, I wonder if David Shaw is going to get a look in the NFL with eight openings. He's often
mentioned. If David Shaw wanted to get a look, he'd get a look in a minute. David Shaw, to me, and I may have mentioned this to you before, whenever I hear him on a national radio show, not talking about his team. I don't care about coaches talking about their team. But when he's talking about big picture stuff, be it rules, be it player compensation, anything, that guy gets it. Not to say I agree with everything that he says, but he's smart and he's invested and he's eloquent. I'd hire that dude in a minute.
Which is why he's on the draft coverage and why he's in the coach's film room for the national championship game. Because he's very good at that stuff.
Yeah.
I think so. I don't know what more he can do at Stanford. I mean, he's kept them. I think they may have gotten close to a BCS game. I don't know if they've been in a BCS bowl since he took over. Maybe they probably have.
Oh, they've been in the Rose Bowl.
So you know they've sagged a little bit lately. But yeah, I think if he wants a job, he's going to get a look. But that's it was like Kurt Ferentz for so long. He was. Is this going to be the year he jumps to the NFL?
Yeah,
because he had an NFL background.
It's the same argument with Brian Kelly. Has he crested at Notre Dame, and is this the time to exit?
Yeah, that's a pretty good comparison. Texas A&M just beat the snot out of NC State.
Dude, NC State was winning that game 13-7. I was listening as I was driving back from Annapolis, had the satellite radio going, and I'm flipping between E Street Radio, thank God for Bruce Springsteen, he got me home, and the Texas A&M NC State game. And it got to be just morbid curiosity. Because NC State's winning that game 13-7. They lost 52-13. So let's do the math. A&M scored 45 unanswered.
I mean, that's Ryan Finley's last game at NC State. And he's probably going to be a second or third day pick, I would think.
Right.
Yeah, it was like the reverse of the Auburn debacle. They scored like Auburn-Purdue 700 game. In the first
right.
quarter. Mm-hmm. So was there any, before we get into the playoff and the national championship game, were there any other bowl games that kind of struck? I know that Auburn game, you had texted me about that one. Was kind of eye-popping. Florida-Michigan was one to me that was a little surprising.
Just the margin?
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Because I think a lot of people were suspicious of Florida. Just wondering, are they really as good as their ranking? And did they really deserve a New Year's Six game? And they went and just punished Michigan.
Did you watch any of the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, a little bit.
That matchup didn't interest me at all.
No.
Jake Browning was a guy who was...
I'll tell you what, the Fiesta Bowl was good, though.
The LSU and...
Central Florida.
Yeah, that's a shame. I know people are kind of kicking Central Florida while they're down right now.
Oh, come on, man.
But they lost their star player.
Right, they gave LSU a hell of a game. They played did. Them well. And Mac, the young man from Norview High School, the backup quarterback for UCF, he distinguished. Why kick Central Florida? They were fine.
They played LSU better than Georgia did.
Right.
So, yeah, I thought it was kind of unfair that people were throwing daggers at them.
It's weak. That's just Twitter and whatever.
Texas Georgia was a shock to me.
Was it?
Yeah, because Georgia should have been in the playoff if we're taking the four best teams based on what we saw during the regular season, I thought. I know you disagree. I think Georgia's a better team than Notre Dame, and particularly now. But, yeah, I was shocked.
But did you think Georgia was going to be motivated, though?
Yeah, because I thought they were going to – after what happened in the two semifinal games – I thought that was going to be their chance to come out and hang 50 on Texas and say, see, we should have been in. And they did the opposite. They got behind the eight ball quick. And, Jay, I think Jake Fromm finished with 3 touchdowns. He had a quiet, really good season. But, yeah, I was surprised by that.
Ellinger's pretty good, isn't he?
He is. He's like a Tebow. He's a big, big kid.
And he's fast.
Did you see the story about his dad?
No.
So his dad – we're talking about Texas's quarterback. His dad had a heart attack during a triathlon and died.
Oh,
when he was in his teenage years, and he had to help raise his siblings with his mom, and he grew up going to his dad taking him to Texas games, and so his dream was to play for Texas. So it was really heartwarming. I don't know if it was a Rinaldi special, but I saw it on game day before the Bulls on that Sunday.
Speaking of a Rinaldi special.
Yeah. Tyler Trent, the Tyler Purdue Trent. Super fan.
Yeah.
That one hurt, I think, everyone.
Yeah, just so sad.
Become kind of the darling of college football.
Yeah, but so uplifting, and just thoughts and prayers to everyone in his orbit. Just an amazing, amazing young man, and just speaks to the power of sports and how it can affect people.
Well, both you and I and everyone listening has had people that we love affected by cancer.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And to see how gracefully he dealt with it, like, it's hard in those dark moments to be as positive as he seemed to be. And I thought it was to see how he touched people, how Scott Van Pelt reacted on SportsCenter that night.
How about that?
Well, I think Scott Van Pelt does the best job of anybody. That show is very entertaining.
Yeah.
And two, he's as nice a guy as there is. And you could tell that Trent affected him. Did you see any of the Oregon-Michigan State game?
No, I heard that was a train wreck.
That would have been your first-round draft pick scoring one touchdown for Oregon.
Wow.
All right, let's get to the playoff.
Sure.
So.
Now, let's be clear. I didn't get a chance to see a lot of the games.
I wasn't much to see.
But listening and kind of half paying attention to the nightcap.
Wasn't much to see. You have pointed out in the past that historically the semifinals haven't been great games.
Yeah.
But these were the Oklahoma game got interesting because Oklahoma started putting up points, but they were down 28-0.
Right. And the closest they got was 11, right? I don't think it ever became a one score.
I don't think so. And that to me reeked of Kyler Murray's the Heisman Trophy winner. Let's show you what our guy has.
Yeah.
And you could tell looking back, I think in hindsight, and I think it was pretty obvious that Tua got hurt early in that Georgia game and was not 100%, and that affected the way he played that game because he was back to what we had seen all year from him in that bowl game. And Alabama just dominated. And we did see that Oklahoma's offense was powerful enough to put some points on the board. But, you know, Kyler Murray had no breathing room early, and it wasn't close. And the other game was even less close with Clemson.
Got sideways late second quarter, right?
Yeah. Clemson, by the way, is now 2-0, and they're going to beat the hell out of somebody games in my predictions. With the NC State and now Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not saying it for the championship game.
Well, you know I've been riding that train all season, the Clemson train.
Yeah. Well, okay, so they lose Dexter Lawrence, and Dexter Lawrence is not some piece. He's a centerpiece. He's an All-American. He's a beast. And for them to come out and just completely shut down Notre Dame was a little surprising to me.
No running game.
And that's Notre Dame's specialty.
Zero.
And Book looked pedestrian. It was a reversal of what he'd looked like all season in relief of Brandon Wimbush, who I think I saw as transferring.
Yes, he is.
All right, so you have the national championship game. This is round four, right, in these playoffs. The first two were championship games last year in the semifinals.
Yeah. Here's a stat for you.
Okay.
Come Monday night, it will be the 15th college football playoff game in 5 years. It will be the 11th one, or be the 11th that includes Clemson and or Alabama.
What?
And the 11th won by either Clemson or Alabama.
What is, can you put in perspective what this Alabama run is happening right now? Like, In your prism of college sports history, like, is this I know we could find Division III football teams, and, you know, there's probably a water polo team that won. But in terms of the big sports, is this the most impressive run you've ever seen?
Given the era in which it's happened, yes. I mean, I was a kid during the glory days of John Wooden at UCLA, and rooted for him, and Alcindor and Walton, and it was just amazing to watch. You didn't get to watch it all the time, but when you did, it was the greatest show you'd ever seen.
Yeah.
But what Alabama has done under Nick Saban, I mean, it trumps what Osborne did at Nebraska, but Now, Osborne went obviously far longer. I forget what Nebraska's run of it, winning at least 9 games every season, back when the regular season was only 10 or 11 games long, what was amazing. And now Bobby Bowden at Florida State had, it was either 13 or 14 consecutive top four AP poll finishes. That's crazy. Alabama hasn't done that yet. But what Alabama's doing that neither Nebraska nor Florida State did during its dynasty runs is win so many, daggum, to use one of Bowden's favorite words, national titles.
Right. And playoff games left and right.
Yeah.
I can't – it's hard for me to – you know, UCLA is the obvious one, right, because they won, what, 10 national titles in, like, a short span.
In 12 years, yeah.
And you look at, like, the Cleveland Browns when they went, what, 10 or 9 or 10 football championships in 11 or 12 years. But what he's doing with scholarship limitations and recruiting against, you know, some of the heavy hitters in college football. I mean, he's lost, since this playoff started, he's lost twice, right? He lost to Ohio State, and he lost in the national championship to Clemson.
Yeah, on the last play of the game.
Right. On a potential pick, illegal pick play.
Right. By the way, a quick shout-out to a friend of mine who writes for ESPN.com, David Hale.
Yeah, I worked with David in Macon.
I'll tell you what, that dude, number one, can write. And I'm here to recommend his piece that he posted yesterday on Hunter Renfrow.
Yeah, it's good.
It's hilarious. Yeah.
He's very funny. David's got a great personality.
He does.
He's great on Twitter.
But it's a fun read. It's a quality read. I'm just telling you, folks, go find it. You'll thank me later.
David's national coming out party was the Dabo Clemsoning press conference, right?
Yes.
Which, you know, David had it. It was a fair question.
Yeah.
And that got kind of – it's played a lot. I think David probably sees those clips a lot. but, yeah, he's a very funny guy. It's hard – and, by the way, this is chapter 4, and this is not going to be the last chapter. I mean, you know, you're talking about probably the two Heisman frontrunners coming back next year, right? And Lawrence and Tagovailoa.
Yeah.
I don't think this is the end of this.
And look what Lawrence will have. He'll be throwing to Justin Ross. He'll be handing the ball to ETN. I mean, yeah.
Higgins is his back, right?
Yeah, T. Higgins.
Yeah, I mean, Alabama, we love the game of college football. I think to maybe the casual person, now it's like the Yankees, right? Like, you're just watching to see Alabama lose.
Well, and it's like Golden State and Cleveland when LeBron was in Cleveland. And some people will say, oh, it's predictable and yada, yada, yada. Both teams are 14-0.
I know.
That's the remarkable part.
Yeah.
I mean, we've never had two undefeated teams in the playoff era in the national title game.
But it's mostly a regional – college football is a regional sport. But Alabama's a national story, a national team. If Clemson wins another national title, then maybe they're at that level too. But, you know, I think Alabama wins. But, man, it's going to be fun to watch, I think.
Oh, I think it's going to be fun to watch, absolutely. And, you know, I've seen a lot of tweets and even stories commenting that the asking price for tickets online now is like $150 or $200. Everybody's going, that's so cheap. That's so much less than previous national championship games. Does college football have a problem? No, college football doesn't have a problem. The problem is the daggum game is
costs a lot to get to California.
Is between two southeastern schools who are playing in California, where, by the way, it cost $1,000 at least to fly to, and where the hotels are gouging the dickens out of you. Nobody can afford to go to the game. The asking price, that's what it's a reflection of. It's not a reflection of the interest in Alabama Clemson Part 4.
If you were – I know I'm catching you off guard with what I'm about to say.
Oh, boy.
If you're looking at maybe the 10 most important players in ACC history, Deshaun Watson's in the mix, right?
Yeah. So is Jameis Winston, by the way.
So I think that Trevor Lawrence, if he stays healthy, by the time he's done, has a chance to be the most, one of the two or three most prominent ACC quarterbacks in the history of the league.
Oh, my gosh. Because he's got two more years.
I know. At least. I mean, he's going to go pro probably if he stays healthy after three.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking about a guy who's going to have Clemson in the mix for national championships every year he's in college. How many people have ever had that?
You would think. Although, as Dabo said in his pre-Cotton Bowl press conference, he goes, I have news for y'all. We're not going to be in the playoff every year.
I don't know. I mean, eventually,
yeah.
time will prove that to be accurate, but I don't know if that's going to be anytime soon. I mean, you're talking about a generational quarterback in Deshaun Watson, 1 year off, and they've got another generational quarterback in Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
I mean, the throws he makes are incredible. And, you know, just so happens the guy across the field also happens to make incredible throws.
Yeah. I like Lawrence's arm better than Tua's. Do you?
It's stronger, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
And Lawrence is sneaky athletic. But Tua's got that Tebow type thing, right? Where he's just refuses to lose. Like, he can make plays happen when his team needs him to make them. So, I mean, I think both – Tua's a little short, I think. But I think both are going to be very good NFL players.
Yeah. Yeah, Lawrence is what, 6'3", 6'4"?
Yeah, and he's got a cannon.
Yeah, yes, he does.
And about the quickest release you can imagine.
As the kids, he can spin it.
Yeah, it comes off his hand. It's lightning quick. Tua's got a very strong arm, too. And he can make the throws. So I think we're going to see these guys for a long time.
I hope Lawrence is around for his junior year because UVA plays in Death Valley in 2020.
And by that time, I don't know if Tua's little brother has committed to Alabama, but maybe.
I thought he had.
Oh, well, maybe we'll get Lawrence versus Tagovailoa II some point in the future. So you like Clemson?
I do. I certainly like him to cover.
ACC homer.
Yes. I said at the beginning of the year I thought they could be historically good.
You did. And if you go back to first week or so, we said this is all playing out to be Clemson and Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's never been a season in college football.
Not that it took a genius to figure that out.
Right. There's never been I can't remember a college football season ever that's been this predictable that the two teams
at the top.
Yeah, would be the two teams standing at the end.
Yeah.
You never know with injuries and stuff like that, but they were clearly the two best teams. They have been for years.
Mm-hmm. They weren't last year.
No, but we found out as we went that the crutch that Clemson was having to lean on was not having strong quarterback play.
I mean, Kelly Bryant was good.
He was fine.
He wasn't generational.
No. And to be honest, neither was Jalen Hurts.
No.
It took a generational quarterback to win the national championship last year for Alabama. But if Trevor Lawrence was on Clemson's team last year, they're playing in the national championship. Well, I don't know, because they played Alabama in the semis. But they probably wouldn't have lost along the way. Mm-hmm. They probably wouldn't have lost to Syracuse.
Yeah.
All right, so we have gone way long on football.
Oh, have we really?
I don't know. What time do you have us?
I don't know.
All right, 48 minutes.
Oh, we're good. We're good.
All right, so quick, has your Super Bowl pick changed before we go to?
I'm not. Yeah, absolutely. Because I picked San Diego.
Yeah.
San Diego's not winning in Baltimore.
You don't think so?
No.
You know they've played 16 road games.
I don't care. They're coming east, and they're playing the hottest team in the league.
It helps that they saw Lamar Jackson, though, recently.
I get it.
I don't think they're going to win either.
And Lamar Jackson is the youngest quarterback in history to start an NFL playoff game.
Really? Yes. I would argue that the Colts are the hottest team in the league. But I think the Chiefs, because the Patriots are going to have to go to Arrowhead, right?
Presuming the Chiefs can win in the divisional round.
Yes. Which has been a stumbling block for Andy Reid recently.
The Chiefs are 0-6 in their last six home playoff games.
I like the Chiefs. And it's hard to pick against the Saints.
Oh.
Although, man, I'm so intrigued to see what Nick Foles is going to do.
He's going to win in Chicago.
You think so?
Yes.
He's been money.
He is money.
I was talking to my dad. He was up here over the week or last week or so. And we were talking about the Eagles and I tend to think that Doug Peterson is a heck of a coach because Nick Foles has been in the league for a long time and no one's found this in him.
Mm-hmm.
And he has discovered this for Doug Peterson. So it'll be fun to watch. there's a lot of intriguing teams in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I agree.
And a lot of young quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson and Pat Mahomes and Goff. And it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
I'd love to see somebody new in there. I picked New Orleans to make the Super Bowl. And the Saints are fine, and Drew Brees is a future Hall of Famer. I'd love to see a Super Bowl featuring two of the younger up and
Trubisky is another young yeah. one who's been surprising this year.
Sure. Give me some first-timers. Give me some new blood in the Super Bowl. That'd be great.
Yeah. All right, so now we'll get to basketball.
Okay.
Virginia, man, not only have they continued winning, they put – not that Marshall's a great team, but they were a tournament team last year, and they're figured to be
– And they advanced.
Right, and they figure to be in the mix with in the league in Conference USA.
Play at Old Dominion tonight, in fact.
John Elmore, I don't know if he's healthy, but was a good player last year for them.
Mm-hmm. Virginia – absolutely suffocated him the other day.
Yeah, well, you know, the combined total was like 150.
And they went over.
And I thought that was going to be – I was like, wow, that's high.
That's because they knew Virginia would score.
They did.
Yeah.
They did. So what
first time they went over – the first time they'd scored 100 under Tony Bennett.
Really?
Yes.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, first time they'd scored 100 since like 2007 or 2008.
That tells you how bad Marshall's defense may be, right?
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot.
But Kyle Guy made
seven. 30.
Yeah, career high 30 and made 7 or 8 threes.
So what do you think – what are your thoughts on them now they're entering ACC play? We've had 2 or 3 weeks since we've talked about them. What do you think? They're undefeated. You still imagine they're going to be in the top – nothing you've seen has changed your mind. They're going to be in the top 2 or 3 in the league.
No, and I think they're losing Saturday.
Who do they open with?
Home against Florida State.
Hmm. Florida State had a close one the other night, right?
Florida State's good. Florida State's really good. The only loss is to Villanova on a neutral court, and I know Villanova's not great.
It's fine. But it's not a bad loss.
Didn't have Phil Cover for like the first 10 games of the season due to a foot injury. Florida State is, to my mind, the deepest team in the league. If they're not, NC State is. But I think Florida State's depth is better and more veteran than NC State's. And Florida State's had some games recently against UVA where I think they believe they should have won and didn't. If I were picking an upset on Saturday, that's one that I would pick. I think Florida State's got a really good chance to go into JPJ and win.
Well, that you're going to be at the game?
No.
No?
No, normal be there. This is one of those days where you want to be two places at once because, oh, by the way, Virginia Tech's 12-1, number 10 team in the country, and they're at home playing Boston College. Now, it's not as sexy as an opponent, but we need to have bodies in both places.
Yeah, yeah.
So Norm and I agreed because Norm went to the Notre Dame game on New Year's afternoon.
Yeah.
And after doing the two bowls, I tapped out and came home and wanted to spend some time with my daughter before she went back to school yesterday. So I watched from the couch as Virginia Tech took care of Notre Dame.
Man, Notre Dame's struggling.
Well, and they're hurt. They lost Pfluger for the year. Notre Dame's not going to make the tournament. They're done.
Oh, yeah, no.
So
I mean, they have some bad losses already, right?
Yeah. But, no, come January, what is it, 15th, when the Hokies come to Charlottesville.
That'll be a big one.
I think it'll be the first – if the rankings hold, it will be the first ever top 10 matchup between the Hokies and Cavaliers in men's basketball.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty cool.
What happened the last time that game was played in Charlottesville?
Yep.
One of the last two losses, right, for the Cavaliers.
Virginia's only ACC loss last season.
I think they'll probably be a little hungry.
At home and overtime to the Hokies.
So one of the themes that I've talked about or harped on this season has been depth. How is depth shaping up for the two schools?
Jay Huff came off the bench the other day and scored 14 for UVA against Marshall. Not his career high, but it's near it. It was his season high. Now, he's not going to be a double-figure scorer by any stretch. I just don't believe that Tony Bennett trusts him that much defensively to give him that amount of playing time. But if he could – he's the one you would think could emerge as that eighth player. If he does, Wow,
then you have something.
Yeah, then they're because he's a matchup nightmare. He's 7 foot and he can stroke it. He's the consummate stretch four.
Yeah.
But can he guard a tree? That's the big question. And then in Blacksburg, I still don't have my arms wrapped around this whole Landers Nolly thing. How come they haven't been able to get the NCAA to certify his test score? I mean, what in the heck is going on there?
He's practicing with the team.
Best to my knowledge. But I and I don't even know that. I should know that, but I don't.
They already lost a key player, right?
And Chris Clark. Yeah, he's gone. He's not coming back.
So, I mean, they're an injury away from having some problems, right? Like, they're obviously very talented and can score, but they're toting a fine line.
Yeah, absolutely.
In terms of injuries or any kind of losing any guy to any kind of significant minutes, you know, they're going to have some problems with depth.
Mm-hmm. But I think if things go well, this could be the best team in the history of Virginia Tech basketball.
That will be measured by their postseason.
Absolutely.
Correct?
No doubt.
Because there's no doubt if they stay on this even remotely close to this trajectory, they'll have the highest ranking of any Virginia Tech team entering the tournament, right?
Yes.
Because they're going to lose a handful of games in the league.
Yeah.
And
most teams are.
Right. So even at 10-6 in the league, they play 18, right?
They're what?
They play 18 in the league.
Yes.
So even at 11-7 in league play, they're still a top 20 team probably, right?
Absolutely.
And have they ever been ranked entering the tournament?
Yeah, I think they have.
The Del Curry teams?
Well, and the Bill Foster team in 96, I think they were ranked. They end up losing to eventual national champion Kentucky in the second round of the tournament. So, you know, maybe they weren't ranked because that would have made them an 8 or a 9 seed.
Yeah. It'll be interesting because if everything's measured by them having the expectations keep growing. The farther they go, like we thought, they have to win a game.
Yeah.
Now, if they don't get to the Sweet 16, if they're healthy, then you think it's kind of a disappointment.
That's the kind of expectations that Buzz Williams has created in just 5 years. In Blacksburg,
it's a catch-22, right? You want to be thought of in that vein, but you also don't want to be chastised for, you know, not doing something that your school hasn't done ever.
Right?
Have they ever made it to the Sweet 16?
They've made the Sweet 16, but I don't believe they've ever advanced two rounds in the tournament.
Back in the old days when the tournament was smaller.
Yeah, and similarly, what will be fascinating about the 2019 football season? How does UVA handle expectations?
Yeah.
Because they will be there.
And Virginia basketball has those expectations, but they're so used to them.
Yes.
That crunch is going to come when the first tournament games start to tip off.
Oh, my gosh.
Because they're with almost, I mean, unless something unforeseen happens, they're going to be a 1 or a 2 seed. And then how do you deal with mm-hmm. all of those questions, because you're going to be staring at one of those giant killers again.
Yeah. And how about, you know, Tony Bennett, the Marshall game was his 300th career victory.
It's quick.
Faster to 300 than Tom Izzo, faster than Lute Olson. Dude's career
those
winning.
Those guys are Hall of Famers.
Yeah. Dude's career winning percentage is better than John Thompson's. You know, better than Lefty Drizel's, better than John Chaney's, better than a bunch of Hall of Famers. It's amazing what he has done.
Talked about a lot of guys that have won some national titles.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, what Bennett doesn't have is a Final Four or a national championship, but he is winning at a absolutely exceptional rate.
If he hangs around long enough, well, those will come.
Yes.
I don't know about national championship because that's so hard to figure out, but he'll get to a Final Four because he's too good of a coach to not get to one. That you can't name a great coach in college basketball that hasn't been to one Final Four.
Lefty, John Chaney, 2 Hall of Famers.
Really?
Neither.
Lefty never made it to one
at
Maryland?
No.
Hmm. Well, it was a lot harder back then, too, right?
Yes.
You had fewer teams making the tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no, Lefty never made it. John Chaney never made it.
That's 2 then.
Yeah.
That's 2. I'll leave it to the Hall of Famer to come up with a couple Hall of Famers that haven't made it to the Final Four. What else am I missing? What have we not talked about? I think we've covered just about all of it.
Yeah, we're in good shape. We we parenthetically mentioned Old Dominion off to a really good start.
1-8 in a row, I think.
Yeah, and
big week for them.
Yeah, Marshall and Western, you got to hold serve. Got to win the two at home.
They just lost one of their key bench guys to a broken foot.
Right, from Hampton High School. He's one of their top reserves, fourth leading scorer. He's out for considerable amount of time. I think Ed Miller's story today said 6 weeks. If he doesn't have surgery, maybe the year.
And I think he had tweeted himself, Godwin, that he thinks he's probably done.
Yeah. I mean, for the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if he has surgery, he's done for the year.
You're talking for people that aren't listening or are maybe not following Conference USA basketball a lot. Marshall and Western Kentucky are probably two of the teams that are going to be involved in the flex schedule, because the top five teams at the end of the regular in February are going to reseed and play each other.
It's impossible to explain.
But the idea is that Conference USA wants to have better teams getting better wins on their slate to improve their tournament resume.
Yeah,
they could blow up if they all beat each other up.
Right, but they want to have the best teams playing one another late in the season to help their, not their RPI anymore, but their net.
And that's, I think it's a brilliant move.
I think it's a great move.
I think it's not only, even if they don't get more teams in,
it'll help their seed.
Yeah, and it also makes it interesting.
Yeah.
You're not having stinkers playing each other at the end of the season. You're having your best play their best.
Yeah. But logistically, it's a nightmare.
Oh, yeah, because you don't know where you're going to travel. Yeah, right. It is.
Good luck getting a charter on short notice.
Right, yeah, it's going to be a little bit more costly.
Yeah.
But if you could get two teams in, and the revenue sharing is something, I don't know about how the Conference USA shares revenue,
yeah,
but I imagine if you get two teams in, it's a windfall that makes up for everything.
Correct.
So they've got Marshall and Western Kentucky. They're considered to be probably three of the top five, certainly right now.
Yeah, along with Louisiana Tech, I would think.
Yeah. So it'll be really interesting to see how they handle those two. They don't play Marshall again this season unless they're in the five-team end of the year run.
And don't play Western either.
Right. So this is maybe your only chance to take out two of the top teams. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be in that top five, you can't miss these opportunities at home.
Correct.
Have they surprised you a little bit?
Old Dominion?
Yeah.
No, not really. I mean, the Syracuse game didn't shock me by any stretch, but I mean, that was, all in all, an unexpected win. But I mean, BJ Stiss playing great. He's coming back off a little injury, but he's healthy now. And Caver has played really well. The young man from Bethel, the transfer from Providence, Dinkins, has really provided rim protection for them defensively that they haven't had in the past, maybe.
Well, they lost a big, right?
Yeah, they lost Trey Porter to Nevada.
They were really undersized.
Yeah.
To get Dinkins in from Providence.
Right, and to have him declared immediately eligible for the waiver to be granted by the NCAA was huge.
I think that's about it, man.
Yeah. No, I knew we'd be going long today. We had so much to talk about.
We hadn't talked in so long.
There you go.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on the NCAA championship football game on Monday night.
Yeah.
I will watch a lot of NFL playoffs. Now it's getting good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we'll have some weekend hoops to talk about.
Yeah. ACC finally getting into gear as college football ends.
It cranks up. You got NC State at Miami tonight. And then, full slate of weekend games, including Clemson at Duke.
That should be interesting. Be a big test for Clemson, obviously.
Yeah, you think.
All right, well, that's it for this week. Come back next week, and we'll see if David's ACC homerism is correct.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.